You're listening to the Youth for Life podcast with Michelle Baum, director of Why for Life at Lutherans for Life, where we prepare youth to be gospel-motivated voices for life. Be sure to stick around after today's live recording of our Chats for Life program to find out how you can be live too on our next Youth for Life podcast. Hello and welcome to this edition of Chats for Life. We have a special Table Talks for Life edition where we're talking about things that are in the news. So welcome if you're joining us this evening, and if you're joining us on the podcast, welcome to you as well. Thanks so much for listening to the Youth for Life podcast. Typically, we start with a prayer. So Corey is going to start us off tonight, and I'll hand it over to her.
All right, please pray with me. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you for this day and for all the opportunities we've had to serve you through this day. We ask that our conversation tonight be fruitful, that we're able to have conversation about these things that are in the news, whether they are heavy stories or light stories, and that these conversations would help others in the future know how to address these life issues from a gospel-motivated perspective. Keep our eyes and our hearts on you as we discuss these things tonight, and be with us and help us to spread the gospel with those who may be listening after the fact. All these things we ask in your name. Amen.
Amen. Okay, so you know me, listeners know me. I'm Michelle Bauman, director of Why for Life. And Corey, you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Corey. I'm the Why for Life assistant, and I'm excited to be here.
And we have one other guest with us tonight, a leader at one of our colleges. Lizzie, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name's Lizzie Gatchell. I'm the co-president of CUC for Life. I'm a sophomore in college.
Yeah, so thanks so much for joining us. So typically at Chats for Life Table Talks, we talk about what's in the news. We talk about articles or things that have just come out within the last week or two. And I proposed an article based on the Pope's new, I guess it's like his a new writing, right? A new position statement, his publication. It's called Dignitas Infinita. I think I'm saying that correctly. But basically, he's come out with position statements on a lot of different life issues. And so that was talked about a great deal in social media these last couple of weeks or last week, and just referenced. And he had some really interesting things to say and interesting things that he included in life issues that I'm not so sure the Vatican has really spoken to before. But tonight, we want to take a look at a few of them in particular, ones that we can say, these are really good life issues to discuss. So I'm going to pose a few questions and we'll have links to this article or to his publication, as well as to an article that actually kind of took a look at that publication and analyzed it for us. So you have the original source plus the analysis from a Catholic perspective. We're going to go ahead and talk about it from a Lutheran perspective as well, from a for life view. So my first question for you ladies is, you know, just in general, why do you think it's important, especially in the modern age, to talk about the dignity of human life? I think, you know, the Pope and this publication, they did a great job of bringing up the dignity of human life. Why does it need to be said? Why do we need to be reminded that human life is important?
I think we have gotten so far away from the we are all made in the image of God idea, and we are all little g gods to ourselves in society today, that we forget about the dignity of all human life and we just focus on our own. And so we forget about the needs of our neighbors. And so I think it's important from that perspective that we do remember we have neighbors to care for, that we're created by God.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that there's a lot of, I don't know, just in like people my age too, that we kind of don't really care about ourselves as much. Even like it doesn't, like other people don't even really matter. It's like it's everybody is their own person and everyone has their own truth, and really that's all you kind of worry about. It's not really a focus on valuing other people. So I feel like the dignity of life kind of gets lost in that too.
Yeah, I think that's very wise. It does shape how we view our neighbors, right? It shapes not only how we view us, but also our neighbors. And I think you both nailed that neighbor position very, very well. And I think it's also, it goes back to with a transition into a post-Christian culture, which again, that's not my term. That's what other people who know much more than me are talking about, that we've transitioned into this post-Christian culture. And so by nature, we don't have the answer to the question, who am I anymore? Right? It's not being taught in the public school system. It's not being confessed necessarily on social media. In fact, some people are saying even the animal kingdom, some elements are more important than human beings. But when we look at God's creative work, when we look at Genesis, when we look at the emphasis that he places on creating Adam and Eve and how important they are, that he uses his hands. He doesn't just speak us into being, and he gives us the gift of life. He enables us to live eternally. We see that human beings are pretty special people, right? They're in all of God's creation, unique in so many ways, and perhaps the greatest of ways is that Jesus came to die for humans, right? He came to die for us so that we might live eternally with him, not for our dogs and not for our cats and not for the trees. And those are all good gifts, but he dies for us. And that gives us a lot of human dignity. And it's worth repeating. I think there's just a lot of people that don't know. I think it's really exciting that that it's not just Lutherans who are confessing that, but also the Catholic Church as well, right? So we don't agree with every doctrine of the Roman Catholic Church, but we often do agree with them on life issues. So in this article and in his publication, what life issues were you especially impressed by? Do you think that was especially important to address?
I think just based on the shifts we've seen with I'll call them cultural Catholics, those who attend church on holidays but don't regularly attend, especially those politicians that we see as being Catholic, just such a hard stance on things like abortion and euthanasia when they've really taken a complete 180 from what the Catholic Church typically has to say. So those were two for me that I was very pleased to see them speak out about.
Yeah, and to affirm, this is the Christian position, right? You can't claim a Christian position if you're not believing in the dignity of human life, and that's at beginning and at end. Sorry, I jumped right in front of you, Lizzie, but what did you think? Which ones were you most excited about?
I'm just looking at it's in the beginning, but when it talks about the social aspects of dignity and just it's like not saying, but it's talking about people like the homeless or other people that maybe their like quality of life isn't as like good or as like on the same level as most people, but that doesn't devalue their dignity of life. I just think that the way that that's phrased in that section of that article of the actual publication of the Pope is just really interesting. Just because I feel like that's sometimes a life issue that kind of gets thrown under the rug because there are ones that are more controversial and more you hear about all the time, but just that it's still addressed in there, I think is important too.
Yeah, I love that too. That's one of the foundations that he builds his case on, right? That we don't base the value of life based on the potential for them to have what we would see as a normal life, right? Or you use the term quality of life, and that's used very often in our medical systems, and that's it's not necessarily a good phrase. Right. Our life is valuable and it is worthwhile because God created it and Jesus redeemed it. And there will be struggles no matter what. Quality of life changes over time, as far as it is defined by medical fields, but the value of life never changes. And so you're right, that's a great foundational aspect. I really love the fact that he's brought in some more contemporary issues, right? And address things like, for example, he addresses gender theory. He talks about sex change. He talks about digital violence, right? And again, comes from the Vatican as a whole, so I'm sure he didn't write it all. Or maybe I shouldn't have said that. Maybe he did. I don't know. But I think it's really important that I think it's really awesome that they're seeing the life issues as expansive, right? That we're looking at the value of human life through all stages and ages, through all issues that devalue life. And it's good that those were included. Human trafficking is included. I'm glad to see some of those contemporary issues come out. Any further thoughts from either of you? Were there any issues that surprised you that he talked about?
I'm looking at the surrogacy one right now, and I think that's interesting that it gets that he talks about it and as much as there is about it. Because honestly, I think just I'm only 19, I'm not very old, so I haven't lived a lot of life. But just I feel like recently I learned that like Christians as a whole don't really support surrogacy. Like in my mind, that was never something that was like considered against life, but the more that I learn about it and the more that I like actually like think about it, I'm like, okay, yeah, that's not something that we should be supporting. But it's I think it's culturally something that it's just kind of accepted, so that he kind of points that out and says that we don't believe in that. I think that's really, I mean, surprising in some ways, because I think a lot of times, like Corey was saying, like there are a lot of Catholics that like to like go to church a couple times a year and say that they're Catholic, but they just don't really ascribe to a lot of these things. But that it's in there, I think, is important too.
Yeah, what do you guys think about his argument for being cautious about surrogacy, for not supporting the act of surrogacy? What do you think about his arguments? Do you think there are any that are just really powerful that we can say, yeah, we agree, we stand side by side there?
I think just looking at it, the language of the practice of surrogacy violates the dignity of the child, and then in the next section says also violates the dignity of the woman. And I think those are two things that we have really begun to see a lot more, especially with children. You know, we see that there is a bond between the child and the mother, whether it is the biological mother or the gestational carrier or whatever you want to say, there is a bond there because that child is growing for 9 months in that womb. And so I think very clearly saying that it violates the dignity of the child and also the woman, and that it is a problem for both moving forward, I think is important to realize. And again, that is such strong language. It's not just harms, it is violates.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's, you know, so many people will argue against or argue for surrogacy as a compassionate choice for people who are struggling to have children, or for couples who want children that can't conceive them, maybe because they are same-sex couples, or maybe because they are couples that are infertile. But you know, you think about it, in relation to human trafficking, even, and the Pope makes this connection there as well for the child, but also for the mother. I mean, how many very wealthy women are being paid to be surrogates? Probably not many. I mean, well, I can say not many. I mean, that's what statistics show. Statistics show that women who are in desperate need of money in other countries and in our own country will choose this as an option to make money, right? And so again, where we are creating people that we are buying and selling for different purposes, and I think the Pope does a good job of, or the Vatican does a good job of mentioning or pointing this out, right? That there's some problems here. Very few people are surrogates for free, right? Every once in a while, somebody does something for their relative, but that's not usually how surrogacy works. And so people, he mentions this, whether she is says, like you read, surrogacy also violates the dignity of women or of the woman, whether she is coerced into it or chooses to subject herself to it freely, right? Because she is then detached from that growing child. So it's not just an issue of money, but also this very real love that develops. So yeah. Any other arguments with surrogacy that you think are compelling? How about gender? That's another one that's really obviously a topic that's worth addressing in America. We're having a conference about that this weekend, and it'll be done by the time this is published. But what about his arguments surrounding gender? What do you guys think about that?
I like this phrase. We cannot separate the masculine and the feminine from God's work of creation, which is prior to all our decisions and experiences, and where biological elements exist, which are impossible to ignore. And I think that's something that we are, as society as a whole, we are trying desperately to ignore those biological realities. And I think it's really going to come back to bite us when we see just how physically broken these people become when they try to ignore those biological realities, and they take all these medications, and we don't have sufficient data to say what the long-term effects are, and the dosages that are being prescribed.
And even at higher dosages or later in that maybe that confusion or transition, we see people making permanent changes that are going to affect them later in life, right? So we hear the stories of detransitioners, but also, like it's written here, it says it is through their bodies that men and women can establish a loving relationship capable of generating other persons, right? Which is a unique gift that God gives to male and female. And when we deny those gifts, when we try to recreate ourselves into really, I mean, let's be honest, it's really into our own image, right? If we're transitioning or trying to change the gift that God gives us, we're breaking the first commandment. We are turning away from God, who is creator, and we are becoming our own creator, right? And so therefore, reforming ourselves into our own image, which is a broken image. And we have a much better promise from God that he will heal our brokenness, that he gives us the image that he desires, and that he continues to work in it through life, throughout our lives, to uphold our lives and to uphold the people around us through the gift of sexuality. So, your thoughts, Lizzie?
Yeah, I think everything you said about those sections is true. And I was looking at the first section of this where he says that the church wishes to reaffirm that every person, regardless of sexual orientation, ought to be respected in his or her dignity and treated with consideration. And I think that's interesting. I mean, it goes on to say, not to say that we should affirm their choice to be a different gender or anything like that, but just affirming that they're still valuable, even though they have made those choices and have what have you with the confusion or the brokenness of their gender, they're still people. And I think that's something that gets lost a lot when you start talking about these things in the church today. Just people want to jump straight to, oh, they're sinning, they're against God, but they're still people first. So I think that's important. He starts with that.
Yeah, I love that he starts with that too, Lizzie. And the truth is, we are all broken, right? We are all broken. We've all broken the sixth commandment. Our sexuality is broken. And so there we start the conversation on common ground, right? We enter into conversations with others, recognizing that we too have sinned, that we too are broken, and we need someone to heal us. We need a savior that's going to enter into our lives and remake and heal the things that are broken. Yeah, absolutely. What about he does he does have a spend some time on abortion as well. And I know we'll be talking about end of life with your article, Lizzie, but what about beginning of life? Can we stand with the Catholic Church at beginning of life?
I may not agree with all of the verbiage being raised Lutheran, and there's some differences in theology, but the sentence that really sticks out to me about in the section about abortion, it says, "Given such a grave situation, we need now more than ever to have the courage to look the truth in the eye and to call things by their proper name without yielding to convenient compromises or to the temptation of self-deception." And then he goes on to cite Isaiah 5, verse 20. But I think that's something that I wholeheartedly agree on. We have so shifted and warped terminology to fit what is convenient that we forget what abortion really is as a society if we're not paying attention to it. And I think that is something we can definitely agree on. And then just how he continues to go on and talk about the different things, in relation to that, and then defending unborn life later on in the paragraph as well.
Yeah, he says this defense of unborn life is closely linked to the defense of each and every other human being. It involves the conviction that a human being is always sacred and inviolable in any situation and at every stage of development. Right? I think he makes it very clear. And you're right. He does encourage the Catholic Church encourages us to call it what it is. And I think as Lutherans, again, we can stand with them. We also have a message of hope, right? We also have the gospel for those who have committed abortion. This sin is also forgivable. It is not the unforgivable sin, right? Double negative there. But it's true. Abortion is a great violation of the gift of life. It solves problems with death. And death is never the solution that God has for us. You want to jump in on that, Lizzie?
Yeah, that section that you just read is the one that I also had highlighted. I think it's interesting how he connects it to every other human life because like you were saying, I think the unborn lives get put in a different category and they're not humans just because they're not born, and that's something that we can agree on even despite what church body we belong to. And just also in the end, where he says that reason alone is sufficient to recognize the inviolable value of each single human life. I think that's kind of an interesting argument. I mean, he also includes faith in it too, but I think that's also an interesting argument to put in there because that just kind of, in a way, takes faith out of it, even though we're reading something from the Pope. Like he's saying it doesn't matter what kind of faith you have. If you look at reason and then you add on the faith that you have, there's all of this understanding and evidence for why we believe that this is something that is wrong and violates human life. I think that's really interesting too.
Yeah, absolutely is. And I think you see that in like the for life, other for life speakers and in the pro-life field that many of them will use reason. And that shouldn't surprise us because reason or logic is created by God, right? God is not illogical. God is ordered. He is not a God of chaos. And so when logic upholds life, and it does. We shouldn't be surprised by that. We should rejoice over that. So even those that are non-believers can come to those same conclusions, and hopefully those conclusions can point to a higher good, a higher truth, which can only be established by God Himself, right? So I guess we do see church bodies that don't use reason, or they use corrupted reason, and church bodies that stand elsewhere on life issues. Why is it important for church bodies to take a clear stance on life issues in accordance with God's word? What do you guys think?
Well, just being gospel motivated voices for life that we are, I think our reasoning should be based in the gospel. I mean, that's just intuitive, but it's also important because if we rely on reason alone, then we start to kind of rely on our own human understanding, which is flawed. And if we relied on that, then we would think that a lot of things were correct that weren't. And so that's why we have God's word, and that's why we have it as an example. And there is so much there that is life affirming. So, like, as a believer, it doesn't make sense to not use the evidence that we've been given.
Yeah, and I think too, taking a clear stance on issues is important because we see over and over in the gospel Paul telling the early church to take a clear stance and to follow what they're being told and taught through what Jesus did on this earth. And I think that's something we've kind of forgotten as a modern church, is that Jesus took hard stances on things, and it's okay for us to take hard stances on things as long as they're in line with God's word. And I've noticed there's a lot of churches who shy away from addressing life issues because they don't want to seem unpopular, or they want to be seeker friendly or things like that. And I think that does more harm than good because we do fall away from the word if we don't take those stances.
Yeah, and I think if you're, if you're twisted to t or tempted, sorry, if you're tempted to twist God's word to fit society in these cases, then it's also going to be pretty very likely that you'll be tempted to twist God's word to fit all cases that don't align. It's a slippery slope, right? When we say, well, this part of the Bible is true, but not this part, right? God just, he would have said something different if he had lived in today's day and age. But we don't see that. We see actually a consistent continuum of God's message of life from beginning to end, right? So like we've got thousands of years there. And God's message doesn't change. He is unchangeable, and his message is unchangeable. And I think when we cave to culture, we become like the culture. And what we need is something different. We need Christ. We need God who stands outside of culture. But I think, we need a God who stands outside of culture, who enters into culture through the gift of his son, Jesus, and changes culture, changes the world. And we have seen Christians change the world. I mean, you look at ancient Roman days when fathers had the legal option after a baby is born to take that baby outside the city gates and leave it. If it was too many babies, like he couldn't, it's like, okay, my family's big enough. Or if it wasn't male to carry on the name, he could choose to do that, and the wife had no way to argue against this. It was infanticide, and yet the Christians who were being persecuted were the same people who went outside those city gates and rescued those babies and raised them as their own, and that changed the world. Like the Christian confession, they're valuing life changes how they are perceived, and we see good come from it, right? So now we've talked about beginning of life, let's talk about end of life. So Lizzie, you want to jump in with your article?
Sure. Okay. So this was something that kind of I was just like scrolling through social media, and this article, well, the title that came up was like "Woman 28 Opts for Euthanasia," and I was like, "What now?" Like, there were a lot of alarm bells going off, and so I was like, "Okay, I think I need to read this," and so I read through it and I was just like, wow, that was okay. So basically it was this woman, I think it's in the Netherlands. And so she decided with her psychiatrist and therapist that it was better if she just didn't live anymore. And so in the Netherlands, they have a law that has been passed for, I think it's like 20 years it's been passed, but it just hasn't, 21 years that had been passed. And it's just now going into effect. And it's called the Termination of Life on Request and Assisted Suicide Act. And so just from the name, it just says it is what it is. And people can choose to end their life whenever they want to with the help of a physician, or I think, yeah, as a physician or whoever can give the medicine to the person. And so it tells her story, and it's kind of crazy. The things that are in here, it's like the psychiatrist had told her that there's nothing more we can do for you. It's never going to get any better. And there it was just very sad to read through this about this woman who just was told that, yeah, your life's not valuable anymore because you have depression, and we'll just, here's some medicine and you'll be okay. So that's just very shocking is the word I would use first. So just after reading it, I'm just wondering, what can we do to prevent laws like this from continuing to spread? Because this happened in the Netherlands, and a lot of times when we see things in Europe, they make their way over here eventually. So I'm just wondering, what could we do to prevent things like that from continuing to spread?
Yeah, and just to clarify it has spread because euthanasia has been legal for a while in the Netherlands and in other European countries, but I think the difference here is that this is for like a mental health issue, right? Rather than a physical illness. So euthanasia has been legal for a time, and people could, if they had cancer or they had some other physical ailment that was going to kill them, they could choose to end their life early. But it has already arrived in Canada. And so the same thing can happen in Canada. If you are living with mental illness and you have no hope of it ever changing, you can request to end your life. So it's our next door neighbor at this point, right? So I think you're asking a good question. How can we prevent this? Corey, if you want to jump in, that's fine. I'll
Yeah.
speak up afterwards.
Yeah. Well, I was just in relation to what we just discussed with what the Pope has put out and the dignity of human life. Again, going back to reminding everyone that there is inherent dignity to their life because they are created by a God who loves them, and just sharing the message that there's more to life than just what's on this earth. That there is hope for the future, because it's clear reading this that this woman has no hope for the afterlife. And so just again sharing that message that yes, in this world we will have suffering, but you are created by a God who loves you, who desires to have you with him for eternity, and that because of those things, your life is valuable and it is worth living. And in that living, you serve your neighbors. Like, I think that's a big way to sharing that message that we can prevent those laws from spreading. And obviously, we see it in the United States, starting state to state and just continuing those conversations with our friends and family while we have the opportunity to make those changes.
Yeah, I think even just a reminder that this person has, that's struggling, that they are loved, that they are not alone, that they will be missed if they choose to end their life in this way, and that, we were made for each other. The emphasis of community, that my role is to help you in your suffering, just as you desire to uphold me and mine. And I think that community effort is really important. To I think another practical way, so again, to be active, to know our neighbors, to know the people that are around us, and to desire to uphold their lives. That's a good start. And we also want to be aware of the laws that are happening. So in America, euthanasia is not legal. Physician-assisted suicide is legal in 10 states plus Washington, D.C. And physician-assisted suicide is, it's not having someone else do the deed, right? It is asking a doctor for medication and then taking that medication yourself. But euthanasia takes it one step further. It says, someone else can give that to me. And of course, because of sin, that gets abused even more than, I mean, it's tragic when anyone dies. But we also see evidences of, even teenagers choosing to have this done to them in other countries. So I think what we can do is also watch for those laws, be aware of those laws. There is a group that's called Compassion and Choices. It is active, very active in America, and the goal is state by state to make physician-assisted suicide legal. And it's been successful in a number of states. So it's important to recognize or to find out, is this group active in our state? What can be done when a bill comes to our state legislature? Who can we talk to? Obviously, our state representatives. Are we capable of going and testifying to counter this bill? I think that that's very important, because what we've seen in other countries is once physician-assisted suicide comes in, euthanasia is not long after, right? It follows pretty quickly. We also see that in those states in America that have physician-assisted suicide, we also see higher abortion rates, right? So there seems to be a theme. When we devalue life at either end, we're probably going to be devaluing life at both ends. I do think it's a good question to ask, Lizzie, and I think there are things we can do, right? So I love Corey's approach to serve the individual. Have your church be very active in that service, right? Especially with older people who maybe are very lonely, or with young people who are very lonely. We see this loneliness epidemic across the board, but also with those that are suffering. I think the final point is just to offer a word of hope in the face of suffering. My husband, who is a pastor, often speaks in terms of seasons of suffering, right? There may be a season of suffering, and that is a very difficult season to embrace. But most suffering does end after a time. Excuse me, or we have medications that can help alleviate some of that suffering, and those can be good and godly, but especially during those times that we draw close to God with prayer and petition, and we ask people near us to pray to uphold our lives, that we might be sustained through this suffering, and that God might work some good in it, right? That we might find that He strengthens us in our faith, or makes us a confession to others, if that is something that we are experiencing.
Yeah, I think those are all great things that you guys talked about. And I think we talked about a lot already, how you were saying to affirm the lives of in the community. But I think just also specifically with mental health, I think it's something that is becoming talked about more often, but just still it's like in this case, it's the reason for why this woman wants to be euthanized. She just feels like her mental health is too much. And so just like thinking about how we can destigmatize it too, because I think it just sounds a lot like in this article that she's been told that her whole life, like because she has mental illness, that she's less valuable. So
Right.
just thinking about Yeah, just ways that we can affirm people that do have mental illness. And I think the seasons idea is also important too, where we like there are other things that we can do for people that are suffering with mental illness than just saying, oh, well, you have that, so we have this option and you can just not be alive anymore. No, there are other ways that we can help and support those people and their suffering. So yeah, I think that I kind of answered my own question. I think also just looking at this article, I read it and then I like sent it to you guys, but just reading it again, it's just the things that are said in it at the end of it, where it's talking about just the general idea of euthanasia. It's saying, it says, this is quoting the Netherlands website about their laws of euthanasia. It's the request must be made earnestly and with full conviction. They say euthanasia is the only escape from the situation. However, patients have no absolute right to euthanasia and doctors no absolute duty to perform it. I think that's interesting because the law is basically saying that it is allowed, but the doctor ultimately still has a choice and the patient still ultimately has the choice. So I don't know if there was anything else in the articles that you guys thought were kind of interesting or a different take on something.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting too, Lizzie, that they gave the doctors a way out. And I am from completing this request from one of their patients, and I'm so happy to see that because again, doctors are called to uphold life. They're called to heal when possible, and if not, to sustain until God takes the individual, right? It's okay to allow that the death to happen if it's inevitable, but really the role of a medical professional is to be one who upholds life, not one who gives the medication to end life. And just for doctors, I'm so glad that those that who would be convicted that this would be wrong would not be required to do it. And I think that's another, just another thing that we can do is to encourage our doctors and our medical professionals to make choices that are life affirming across the board, and to encourage young Christians to go into the medical field, to become those doctors, to become those nurses who recognize that life is valuable even in the midst of suffering, even in the midst of dying, and to find ways to uphold those doctors and encourage those young people to go into the field is important.
Yeah, and I
Yeah.
think too, just remembering that there is hope because there are doctors who will stand up against this. I think that's something we get bogged down with all of the sad, but we have some hope that there are doctors who will stand up and say, "No, I cannot do that for you. My faith does not allow me to take your life."
Yeah.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, I think the giving the doctor choices also it is encouraging, even though reading through all of this and about the laws is saddening, just to see that that is happening. And I think along with that, just equipping people to be able to talk about this type of thing, just like how can we help others understand why euthanasia and physician-assisted suicide is wrong, because it's becoming so widely accepted. It's like we have this technology, we might as well use it. It's so just like, how do we convince people that it's just because we have the technology doesn't mean we should use it?
That's a great question, and I think it is kind of goes back to like some core questions on sin and identity and how we use human beings use good gifts and we corrupt them, right? We because of our sinful nature. But I think it does go back to relationships, and again, knowing knowing the people in our family and in our neighborhood and in our churches and loving them, right? Caring for them. I think it's much harder to it would be much harder to make a decision like this to end your life if you knew someone needed you, if you knew someone would be lost without you, right? If you were reassured that you were valuable to them. I just you hear that in cancer patients and patients who are terminally ill. They you know, Christians obviously know what comes next. But in the midst of that suffering, to have someone there to hold their hand, to take them to the doctor's appointments, to help them recall memories of better times, to remind them of the hope that they have, that God could heal, and even if not this side of heaven, will heal the other side of heaven. I think it's very important to remember that God places us in vocations, and those vocations, those relationships, are meant to portray him, to share him with others, and they are gifts. Whether those the people that are in our vocations, the people that are have our relationships, or that we're in a relationship with are suffering, then it is our gift to continue to uphold them and help them bear their cross, right? We were not made to be alone.
Yeah, I think in that too, in the article, it talks about how this woman has a boyfriend who you would think he would be affirming her choice to live, and instead he is affirming her choice to die. And I think that's something we talked about in the last article too, is we don't affirm the worldly choices. We affirm the life they've been given by God. And so, in that, finding the help that that person needs and supporting them rather than saying your choice is valid and let's carry that out.
I know. I
Yeah,
was
I
really
found that
sad.
interesting
Yeah,
too.
go ahead, Lizzie. Go ahead.
Yeah, it was interesting to me that they listed the person that should be her support person as supporting her decision to end her life. I don't know, understand how you could have a personal relationship with someone and be like, oh yeah, it's okay if you end your life, if you think that's what you need to do. It must not be I don't know. It just must be an interesting relationship, just if that is the dynamic that's happening there. That just was something that baffled me about this article too. Yeah.
Yeah, it was very saddening to read that. And I think the only way that I could to reconcile that is that sometimes when we see people suffering so much, right? And I don't know how much this woman is suffering, we desire an end to that suffering. And that is okay. That's a good and godly desire to petition God to end someone else's suffering. But when we don't know God, the only other option to end suffering is death, right? I mean, if the medicines aren't doing it and those sort of things. So clearly, that was their answer. And it wasn't, we're trusting that God, that this will be a season that will pass, or we're trusting that we will find a medicine or a doctor that can help with this mental illness. But instead, this is the only answer. And again, goes right back to Genesis, right? What do Adam and Eve choose? They choose to eat of death. They choose to be their own gods. And here is a prime example of choosing to be our own God, to decide when our life will end. And it always involves death. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that is a sad reality about stories like this. But I think it's also important that we look at it and we talk about it as we have been doing, because it's you can see a lot of things in the news that are just make you sad and they're just not life affirming. And but if you let that get to you, and you just get, I don't know, bogged down by that. It can be hard. So just always looking at things with an approach of how does this not affirm what I believe, and how does it? Because there are some things in this article, even though it's kind of crazy, there are some things that, as we said about the doctor being able to choose, and at the end it also has like the crisis text line, which I think is really interesting, just what the information about in the article is that they feel like, oh, we should probably throw that in there because we talked about suicide. And I think that is, in a way, that is encouraging that they put that on there because they still want to value people. But I also think it's kind of just like there's a lot of things in the media that were like, even shows, if they like talk about suicide or mental illness in the episode, they'll be like, oh, and here's the number at the end of it. So that was
Yeah.
just also interesting to me. So,
It's ironic. Absolutely. Yeah. We have one more article.
Yes, I'm excited to talk about this one. So this is our lighthearted article, and the headline is Hollywood Actors' Fatherhood Reflection. It's your duty to be their role model. And so this is an interview that was done with Aaron Taylor Johnson, and he was speaking out about the weightiness of fatherhood. And he says that it's his job and his responsibility to keep his daughters safe and to set a good example for them. And that I wanted to read this direct quote from him. It says, "You realize it's your job to protect the purest, most innocent thing that's come into the world, and it's your duty to be their role model." And so I just want to ask a couple questions about fatherhood. And so that first one goes back to that quote where it's your job to protect the purest, most innocent thing. And so I want to ask what this means for us as For Life Christians who are raising or who desire to raise children. I know that Michelle has raised two boys. I am in the throes of raising children. And Lizzie, I know that you someday hope to have children. So what does that mean for us to be role models?
I think I mean, I'm not a parent, but as looking at my own parents, I think that being a role model for your child also shapes how they end up being a role model for other people around them. So just like my parents taught me how to be how I am, and so I think that's important as Christians to look at how do I behave, because my kid is probably going to behave the same way that I do, not in everything, but in general, just giving the example that we want to see come to fruition in the child that we're raising.
And I think, again, I know we just talked about vocations in the last article, but these are vocations that are only given to one man and one woman, right? Each child has one mother and one father. No matter how we reconfigure family, the vocation has been given to one mother, one man, and one woman. And they're incredible vocations. We know that parents, their influence on a child's life is irreplaceable. It is so essential to their well-being, their physical well-being, their mental health, their spiritual well-being. We know that children, like you said, Lizzie, they do reflect their parents. They get a sense of belonging from their parents. They have a connection to their parents that they won't have to anyone else. Even and that tie shouldn't be broken. Now, sometimes it is because of sin. And so we have other parents that step in and love, like in the case of adoption, or foster care. But I think it is important to recognize that the gift of fatherhood and motherhood is a unique gift, and there is much gift, but also much responsibility with it for our own children. And I think it's good to reflect on that, right? God gives you a vocation; He's going to provide what you need for that vocation, but it is a calling, and no one else can do it.
Yeah, and I think too, something that's interesting about this as well, I read up on this actor after the fact because his name was familiar to me, but I don't know much about him. He has four children. Two of them are stepchildren, and two of them are biological. His wife had daughters from a previous marriage. So I think interesting too that he is willing to not only take on the role of father for his biological children, but like you were talking about Michelle adopting or fostering those children that also need parents, and that he's willing to be a role model for those children as well, even though they are older. And I was reading up, like I said, on him, and I think those are those two daughters from that are his wife's from a previous relationship are only 10 to 15 years younger than he is, and he's still stepping into that fatherhood role for them.
Yeah.
So
I do think too, one other just point. It's very, very common. We hear, it's not about the quantity, it's about the quality of time that you have with your kids. But that's false. I mean, let's just put it out there. It's true. Quality time is good, but quantity time is also good, right? Being there to do baths, being there to drive to school, being there to make meals, being there to get dressed, doing the shopping with them, taking walks with them. It's the daily things that also shape the relationship and give you an opportunity to model for your children what it means to have sacrificial love. It's not just when it fits into your schedule, but it's also when it doesn't fit into your schedule, right? And you remake your schedule for the benefit of your child. It's important.
yeah, and in that too, Michelle, I think also we've been taught a lot of like, oh, well, who's watching the kids? Or dad's taking a role in watching the kids, or he's babysitting. And I think reframing to say, no, he's parenting. It's not babysitting, it's not watching, it's not taking his turn. It's being a present parent. And again, it's not just the quality time, it's the quantity time of grocery store trips. So mom can have a couple minutes to regather herself, or like you said, doing bath or things like that, being present and parenting, not just watching or babysitting, as we've heard a lot. So I know we're running short on time, so I'm gonna skip ahead a couple questions and just wrap up. I want to wrap up with this one because I think it's a good one to go out on an encouraging note. But how can we continue to encourage young men to not only desire to be married and have a family, but also to be a strong example in their homes for their wives and children?
I think a lot of it starts with the example of having a father who is involved and is present. I think you see that a lot. Like if your dad was not present, then you as a son might not be present, or you want to be the opposite of your dad and want to be present and involved in a way that he might not have been. I mean, and you see that a lot today. I think more people more like you were saying, where it's like the dad is babysitting or whatever, it's not, it's becoming less of that. And I think a lot of people, like even my age, I'm hoping like that you can kind of see that where it's becoming less of a, wow, you're such an involved dad, or is no, it's your job as a father to be a parent just like the mother is. And so I think just being the example is a way that we can encourage that too.
Yeah, and I'm gonna jump at it from the other end of the spectrum, and I think you're right, Lizzie. I mean, I have a husband who is a very involved father, who parented as a father and still is parenting very well. And I'm so blessed that God gave him to me, right? And that we could parent together. But I think also, especially as you're raising sons, and but also as you're raising daughters, but when you raise sons, I think it's really important to remind them of that vocation as well. So when we ask little kids, what do you want to be when you grow up? Or even high schoolers, what are you going to school for? What do you want to do? it's great to also remind them of the vocations of father and husband, right? I love it when kids say, "I want to be a dad someday." What a great occupation, what a great vocation, right? And to when our kids naturally gear toward professions and vocations outside of the home, those are good, and those are ways that we support our family, right? That's ways that we are witnesses in the world and that we are also able to support our family. But our vocations at home are just as valuable, if not more in some cases, right? And so I think it's good to start talking to our boys about what it means to be a man, about what it means to be a father, about how they should be a father someday, and the things they will want to teach their children someday, to give them that future vision. I know that's something that we did with both of our boys, and especially one of my sons, just from little on up, he couldn't wait to be a dad. He couldn't wait to be a husband and a dad, right? And we've always kind of jokingly told him, but please get married first, right, before you become a dad. And of course, of course, of course. But the those are good ways to show the joys of fatherhood and the things to come. That's a gift too. It's not a gift you have right now, but it's a gift hopefully God will give you someday, and to help them look forward to that gift.
Yeah, and I just thinking about that question for myself too, of we've got young children at home, just continuing to model what that looks like as you go about your day. It's not just the conversations, but it's also the actions. How do you set the example for your family in the things you're doing around your house? So yes, you may be having conversations, but also are you helping to lead the family through Bible study and devotions? Are you setting the example of a loving husband, of a loving father? And I think those are just two things too, just to continue to encourage young men to not only speak it, but to act it and live out those vocations in all manners.
And just two to jump in after that, I think, just so the young men don't think, oh man, this is a lot of work, right? And I'm not sure I can do it. The truth is, you don't do it alone. And we have a really wonderful God who shows us what it means to be a husband and a father, right? Jesus is the groom, and the husband to the church. And we are our husbands and our fathers are imperfect, and they will fail. But through word and sacrament, God strengthens men and boys to become the men that He desires them to be, right? To continue to uphold lives. And it's good for wives to say, "You're doing a great job," right? And to thank them for the role they're playing. But it's okay to go into it knowing that you won't do it perfectly, right? You won't parent perfectly, you won't be a perfect husband, you won't be a perfect father. But you don't have to be, because we already have a perfect father, and we already have a perfect husband. And that is Christ Himself, who loved us so much that He gave Himself his life up for his bride, the bride that was condemned to death, right? And so instead he dies in her place. And I think that's another, again, another reminder to our young men. This is the goal, and the goal is unreachable, but no worries, because God is going to be at work in your life, to do the loving and the caring, through imperfect hands that your children and your wife need. So on that note, we are going to end tonight's Chats for Life. Thanks so much for joining us, Lizzie and Corey. Thanks so much for our opening prayer and this awesome article. It was very uplifting at the end. Families are good. They're good gifts. If you are interested in joining us for table talks, let me know. We'd love to have you on as well to talk with us about life issues. And we hope that you follow and and join us next time. Thanks.
Thanks for joining us for today's life topic. Check out whyforlife.org or email Michelle at whyforlife.org to find out how and when you can go live with us at our next Chats for Life session. Or join us next time, right here at Why for Life Podcasts, where youth learn how to be gospel-motivated voices for life.